Here's Adriano with a step behind the defense. Still going. No flag. Adriano cutting in. And she scores.
What's good? Welcome to another episode of Diaspora United. I am Andre Carlisle, and I am one of your hosts. Thankfully, it's not just me. That'd get very annoying very quickly. I'm here with Courtney Stith. Courtney, how are you?
Do you really have to ask? It's my permanent permanent state of I'm sleepy and I need a nap. But the sun, oh my god, it was so warm out today. It was so nice. The sun, I was like, wow, haven't seen you in forever.
See, and this is why I ask. Sometimes I get the tired, sleepy, I'm dragging, and then sometimes, you know, we get the happiness of the sun is out. That makes me happy.
Thank goodness. Well, my body, I'm still suffering from post-daylight savings or springing for undaylight savings. I thought Congress passed something that they made daylight savings illegal, but we're still going through it every single year. And something that used to not affect me as a teen and young adult affects me more now than it did before. And I'm like, I can't do this.
I'm just happy for longer days. I get annoyed when the sun goes down too early. So that makes me happy, even though at the moment I'm sleeping through like most of the sun. I'm like, yeah. All right. In this episode.
Hey, Andre, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm actually really hyped because the NWSL season starts and I'm really excited about it. And this is like to me, this is one of the most anticipated seasons that I think the league has had in a very long time. And so I'm very excited about a lot of the teams, a lot of the talent that's into the league. And it's going to be a lot of storylines. So I'm excited for this episode too. Did you like how I did that? You like that? You like that?
I did.
Yeah. I'm not going to read a review this time because we got a lot to get into, but I do want to give a shout out to Caitlin, who actually sent us the presentation that they did about should the NWSL draft exist. It was a very good presentation. I appreciated you sending it. Love clicking through the slides as well. And I'm hoping you got a good grade on that because it looked dope and I appreciate being, I was a source, y'all. I was in the references section. It was me.
Well done. I also want to give a shout out. I really enjoyed all the anime, like all the figures in the presentation. I really did enjoy them. I mean, it's very cool.
Yeah, they were excellent. Okay, what are we going to do in this episode? We are going to give our overall thoughts on the upcoming NWSL season, but we're really going to get into a team-by-team preview. That's right. If you see how long the episode is, that's why. We're talking about every single team in this episode. I'm going to run it down in order. San Diego Wave, Portland Thorns, North Carolina Courage, Seattle Reign, Angel City, Gotham, Orlando Pride, and then we're going to take a break. Not like, you know, another episode. Like, we're just going to take a break. And then we're going to do Washington Spirit, Rossing Louisville, Houston, Kansas City, Chicago, Bay FC, Utah Royals. That's right. We're going to do every single one. 14 teams.
And then some last-minute predictions.
Yeah, then some last-minute predictions. So we should probably get started, shouldn't we?
Yeah, we could just keep chatting.
All right, then. There is a general team note that I did want to mention off the top. So actually, this may not be a bad idea that we're just going to keep chatting. 6 of 14 teams have a new head coach to start the season.
I have some good coach stats. I have one good coach stat.
Okay, you got me right by saying some, but okay. No, are you going to drop it now?
It's truly just one. No, I'll bring it when it's relevant to the team. It's about like one team's rotation of coaches, and it's actually not the Washington Spirit.
I thought it would be. So.
It's not.
Good to know
it is
that.
Not.
All right. Well, we've chatted. We've teased. Maybe we should get into the previews.
Yeah, let's get it started. Well, I think before we actually talk about San Diego, we do need to mention that there has been reporting that San Diego Wave is currently up for sale.
That's also true, yes.
Which is something that Sportico broke a few hours ago when we're currently recording. And well, I was like...
being purchased, it seems.
Well, yeah, it's me, but like they're being sold and like... Oh, I didn't know they were up for sale. Did you know they were up for sale?
I sure did not. And how they going to get sold? How that sale going to get completed before Seattle? Like, what the hell's going on there?
That's actually facts. Yes, Sportico did break that reporting or break that the waiver being purchased. Also in like two installments, which made me think of Afterpay or like Layaway, which made me temporarily giggle. And you know, I'm not going to read the evaluation stats because I think evaluations are honestly fake, especially when you have a closed system. It's literally all fake. Yeah. But yes, Ron Burkle is selling the San Diego Wave in a two-part deal that does value the club, at over $100 million, which is kind of surprising. And because we now know that NWSL like entry fees can be extremely expensive in the high, what was it, like 40 to 60 million, I believe? But San Diego's was 2 million. So there's been exponential.
Well, that's what was reported. This tells you, I mean, if you want to Google Ron Burkle and learn some things, you certainly can. Check out that Wikipedia page. There's a lot there. But I'll also say this kind of tracks, in my estimation, where as soon as teams started like kicking in the door and spending a bunch of money on transfer fees to build teams and all that, he was like, no, I'm going to sell this. I'm not doing that. I'm getting out. And it's like, all right, get your broke ass. Clearly not broke, but still, if I call you broke if you're not willing to spend money. So yeah, get your broke ass out. That's fine. I ain't mad about it.
Yeah, but it is just like, I mean, as we've seen through, I mean, the Washington Spirit has been through it. We're now seeing Portland and Chicago come out on the other side of it. It's now Seattle, no more OL. Rain is kind of in the midst of it. I think even though that is nearing towards its end, it is just like kind of deeply surprising that a club like San Diego would get sold in literally a third year of existence too. And honestly, like we also don't necessarily know what that means. Like obviously all these new owners have come in saying that they will spend money, but also it'll stand to tell the test of time if that will actually happen. Just want to inform.
Let's also remember that these are the same owners, whatever the competition committee is comprised of. These are also which is a board of governors thing. These are also the people that agreed to that net transfer threshold. So
yeah,
it seems true. Like,
wait a second. Then you got to outcast that guy's vote if he was like, I'm selling anyway.
But like, facts.
Like, you can't be like, can't come in and make some rules and be like, I'm out. Like that's not fair for the governing, but unless those rules only last from year to year, which honestly, I don't know if they do. But can't come in, make rules and be like, bye. Like hit them with the peace sign, hit them with the deuces. But yeah, just wanted to give people some context around that. Cause yeah, then when I saw that, I was like, what? Excuse me? And also I'm not the huge fan of just like ownership changes. Like it just takes a club that at least from the outside looks relatively stable and just like puts them also in a period of instability, which is 100% not ideal for players and coaching staff and people who work for the club. But now we can go to the actual part for San Diego Wave. San Diego, hilariously, didn't really have, like, I think when we look at the overall picture of NWSL transfers and teams having lots of transfers, San Diego was not one of those teams, really. They lost, and to be fair, these are key players lost. I feel like they're two big players, correct me if I'm wrong, are Taylor Korniak, who now goes by Taylor Flint. She had to get married, so if you see Taylor Flint, that is the formerly Taylor Korniak. I know for me personally, it takes like my brain a real long time to get with them last name changes. It like breaks my brain a little bit.
We'll get to the one that really stumped me soon and I'll let you know what happened. But yeah, one of those, I was like, hoopsed? Oh.
There have been a lot of transfers like preparing for this where I was like, I fully forgot that happened. But yes, no Taylor Korniak, or sorry, Taylor Flint. Kelsey Turnbow retired. Also, I believe Kaylee Reel went to Utah as well. And if you think about for the U.S. Women's National Team, where for San Diego, they could potentially have their two starting center backs going to the Olympics. They don't have a ton of center back depth. But then for some players coming in, they brought in Elise Bennett, Hannah Lundqvist. That's kind of right. Kennedy Wesley through the NWSL draft, as well as Maya Jones through the NWSL draft, Caitlin Torpy, and then they signed free agent Savannah McCaskill. She left Angel City. Thought she was gonna go out as an Angel City legend. R.I.P. but yeah, those are some key players that have joined and some key players that have left. Andre, how are you feeling about San Diego coming into the season? You know, obviously coming off a league win, winning the NWSL Shield, aka the NWSL Cocktail Plate. But, you know, they've made it to the playoffs twice in each year of their history, but haven't made it to the final yet. So how are you feeling about the squad?
I'm not going to lie to you. How do I say this? I appreciate and like just about everything that kind of Casey Stoney does. I like how she kind of like, I like her kind of no-nonsense business. I like, you know, the Blazers, the sitting on the cooler. I think that, you know, what she did at Manchester United, just building that squad, what she did at San Diego Wave, building that squad, I think it's incredible. So, like, I definitely ain't going to be the person to, like, talk about her, her like, skills of management. It's just that she orchestrates a style of football that I do not care for. I'm just going to put it that way. I understand she's a former defender, so these things happen. But I just don't, and I'm actually very confused. They dropped their roster, and there's 23 players on this roster, which honestly is light. I thought the Spirits were light, but the Spirit at least have one more player on their roster. But San Diego, I'm looking, and they have named three midfielders?
Now, which I'm sure I tweeted that out and it set my mentions aflame.
Maybe one of these players in defense, or maybe one of these players like that it's a forward, maybe they'll move back like Jaden Shaw. I'm sure she'll end up playing attacking midfield or something, but they list three midfielders. That, if just by the numbers, eight defenders, three midfielders, nine forwards, that kind of tells you something.
I think there's also just a little bit of maybe a little bit of NWSL nonsense. Like, I very much expect Sierra Enge to play in the midfield. Also, Melanie Barcenas to also probably, like, be more of a midfielder than a forward. But yes, at first glance of those three, it was just like, huh. And so, yeah, San Diego doesn't play the most attractive style of football. I do expect... honestly expect them to win a bunch of games and probably make it to the playoffs now that the playoffs have expanded to eight teams. Just given, you know, having a player like Kaylin Sheridan at the back is obviously going to just naturally win you some points, as well as Jaden Shaw coming into really good form. She's been absolutely tearing it up. Emily Van Egmond and Danny Colabrigo will have their work cut out for them if they start Savannah McCaskill as their 10. Which is going to be a fascinating sight to see. And yeah, I mean, I think like the thing is like, there hasn't been that much with this squad, like San Diego's, there hasn't actually been that much movement of like players coming in or really players leaving. So I can't expect a bit of the same from them, if not maybe getting a bit better because you have a Jaden Shaw who's getting a bit better. You also beefed up your already, to me, quite solid attack with an Elise Bennett coming in as well, who I expect to get in and get some playing time and score some goals. But yeah, the only three official midfielders does, I'm like, what are you doing? But I also, since there hasn't been also like a ton of, if I'm being honest, there hasn't been so much kind of like, it's not like the squad has been overhauled at all. So I also just, I generally expect Casey Stoney to maybe continue doing what she was doing. But it will be a question for the Olympic break for them.
Yeah. I'm to be honest, what I'm mostly interested in is how Savannah McCaskill and Jaden Shaw are going to work.
100%.
I don't really understand that. I don't know if they're going to move Jaden Shaw to the forward line, which I would hate because to me, she's a central attacking midfielder. So I don't know. But also, Casey Stoney doesn't like turnovers. You know, as a defensive person, she likes control of the game.
Get ready. And
that's kind of like when you take risks with the ball like Jaden Shaw does, or you hold on to the ball too long sometimes like Savannah McCaskill does.
Making the wrong pass at times.
You ask which one would she likely prefer, and I'm guessing probably the latter. So to me, that's going to be interesting for San Diego. But, you know, they definitely won't lose many games. Will they have the exact same success as last season? I'm not so sure.
Yeah, honestly, I'm not so sure either. Because also, like, I know Casey Stoney actually said this in a press conference today because the team plays on the day that you will be listening to this. Where she, to like, someone asked, like, oh, it's, you know, it's the Shield winners versus the championship winners. And asked her, like, a question about something about, like, the two teams facing each other. And she was like, we're the best team in the league. We won the league. We're the best. And I was like,
yeah,
it's very sure. European. But also, like, I don't necessarily know if San Diego is the best team in the league. Like, even looking at last, like, thinking about how competitive it was last year and that San Diego only clinched or could have lost technically on the last, like, could have not clinched it on the last day. It's not like they were, like, you know, vintage North Carolina or even a vintage Portland where they were just, like, so far and away the best team in the league. So it was, like, kind of funny seeing that, being, like, the league was extremely competitive last season. Like, there was a moment where if Gotham wasn't getting ties and instead were getting wins, they also could have won the league as well. Like, I don't know. It was just like kind of a funny thing to say where I was like, that is such a European mindset of like, we won the league, we're the best team. But it was like, you also won on like basically the last day. And it's because Portland somehow lost by so many goals to Angel City, which I remember was like so surprising in the moment. So yeah, it was, yeah, that was like kind of a funny thing to say.
It's funny to hear her say that. And I don't expect her to say anything different being from England. You know, to her, you win the Shield. That's it. That's what makes sense. But I, you know, I also say like San Diego did win the most games by one game, but they did win the most games last season. But also if you look at the flip side of that, you want to know who lost the fewest games?
Gotham.
The Spirit. So it doesn't really matter, right?
I mean, Spirit set a record for most ties?
Yeah, they like doing that. Okay, let's move on to Portland. We're not to the Spirit yet. We're moving on to Portland. The Thorns. Oof, the Thorns. Oh, the Thorns. For a second there was kind of an exodus for the Thorns, right?
Yeah, I mean, it felt like it a little bit. I mean, when you lose, like, I mean, Crystal Dunn announced, to be fair, extremely early on, hilariously enough, that she was leaving. But there's, you know, no Crystal Dunn. Rocky Rodriguez was traded to Angel City. Emily Menges was traded to Bay FC. Bella Bixby is going to be out for the season because she's on maternity leave.
Shout out.
And I know, shout out. I like, it brings me so much joy when a player's like, I'm having a baby. And I'm like, I don't even know you. But like, it's awesome that you also have like the ability to do this in your career, because we know, like, even think about Leon and what, 2021, we're making it hard for players to come back, like, have babies, come back for having babies. So it's just like, it's like, oh, this is a good thing. So yeah, it did feel like there was like, you know, having basically losing what your one of your starting center mids, one of your rocks in defense, and then on top of that, like, you're losing another crucial center mid for you. It was like, ooh, what's going on with Portland? But then they also, to be fair, got some huge signings in. They got Jesse Fleming from Chelsea, which I know for us was an absolutely huge signing. They pulled in a player named Marie Mueller, who I believe is Danish, which didn't actually set the internet aflame, but when they were teasing it, we thought it was a bigger player than who it actually was going, who it turned it to be. And this player could be incredible. I just don't know. They picked up two draft signings in Peyton Linehan and Olivia Wade-Katoa, who, Andre, if I'm remembering correctly, you were a big fan of Olivia Wade-Katoa.
Yes, she was a baller by BYU.
Yes. And then as well as Isabella Obeys. And then one Nicole Payne, who is, I don't think a lot of people know about them Payne sisters.
Birmingham's own.
First of all, Birmingham's own. I'm a big fan of both of them Payne sisters. And so, I don't know. I don't want to say the exact same thing. Also mentioning when it comes to contract news, Becky Sauerbrunn is back for one more year, and so is Christine Sinclair. They both signed one-year deals that go through the end of this season. But I can't lie. Sometimes I still have some questions about Portland, where it's like, you know, I'm curious how they're going to do without a player like Emily Mengus, who has just been so important to their back line. I really rate Jessie Fleming and I also really rate Nicole Payne, but I do think also, you know, it's going to take them some time, especially from both of them coming from Europe. It's definitely going to take them a bit of time to adjust to the league a little bit, but also at the same time, Portland is Portland and they find ways to win even when you're like, they're not doing well. And it's like, okay, we're going to pull like 7 wins out of the hat. And on top of that, you have an Olivia Moultrie who is still like growing in her truly young career. And then on top of that, you have Sophia Smith, who is back and healthy and hungry. And when you have a healthy, hungry Sophia Smith, that's you're naturally going to do well.
Yeah, Portland's an interesting one for me. I do think that the loss of Crystal Dunn and Rocky Rodriguez are big. I think midfields are important. I'm going to go ahead and say that.
I feel like that's like the tagline of this podcast.
It is. Midfields, they are important. Yeah, that's how I do think Jessie Fleming will be good in midfield as well. But again, there will be a transition period as well. She also hasn't played a lot. I think that's also a factor to consider. Emma Hayes did not trust her. It's kind of an every week starter. And so she kind of got into games as a sub or sometimes not at all. I also am wondering what they're going to do kind of at fullback. Megan Klingenberg was really good in attack. I was looking at some of the numbers. I'm kind of doing a fun thing on my newsletter. I'm kind of looking at like the on-ball value, which is a stats bomb thing of all the players position by position. And Megan Klingenberg was like really good with her dribbles and carries, with her, you know, contributing to build up an attack, but was horrendous on the defensive side. Like, players just went right by her, no problem at all. As much as I love Reyna Reyes and think she is really good, she can also get caught high up sometimes, and she's good when she's able to face players up, but she does leave a little bit of space as she learns and to adjust still. Really good in attack, similar thing. So for me, this team is going to need the ball in order to hide some of those defensive mistakes, and I don't know if they're going to have the strongest midfield to be able to do that outside of Sam Coffey.
No. Sorry. I realized I like took a moment to think about what you said. I wish I had Portland's possession stats over the last few seasons, but also I feel like they are a team, like, I can't lie, if there's ever a team that you're you're going to probably concede the ball to, it would be a team like Portland. But also thinking of like, you know, a midfield trio of a Jessie Fleming, a Sam Coffey, and an Olivia Moultrie. Those are, to me, 3 players who, for the most part...
I'd play Hina. They need to get Hina in the games more regularly.
A midfield box midfield.
Box midfield?
I was like, wait a second. I was thinking, and I was like, there's someone I'm missing from this equation, and it was Hina Sagida. But yeah, you know, any rotation of those 4, if they're going to play a 4-3-3, or maybe if they decide to do a box. I do think that, like, those are also 4 players who like to have the ball. And so it kind of seems like also Portland is kind of getting, I mean, it kind of seems like from a lot of their acquisitions that they're also planning on having the ball for the for big parts of the game. But it will be a question, I think, of what you said about Reyna Reyes and Megan Klingenberg. Of, we know the NWSL is a highly direct, highly transitional league, and so, you know,
I might save that the thought. I might save that, like, bookmark that thought. I have a thought with that. Maybe we'll get to it at the end.
I was just saying that's a moment for people to a place people can exploit them on the counter.
No. I hear you. I just want, you know, just bookmark. I've got a response to that. I'm about the NWSL being a transition league. I'm just a thought. That's all.
I mean, it's more direct than actually transitional. But
again, I was like, remind me.
Okay, I was like, we don't need. Okay, but yeah, Portland also because of a Sophia Smith up front. Even though actually I do well, not having no Bella Bixby is going to be a question mark. Who's going to be their number yes. one goalkeeper for the season? Because Bella Bixby bailed them out a ton last season. Especially I remember when Becky Sauerbrunn had that foot injury for the majority of the season. So with no Emily Mengas, could be a big question of like, are you going to win every game 4-3? Which you could. I'll make for fun TV, brand new media rights deal, fun TV 4-3 every time. But also at the same time, yeah, losing basically two of your defensive cornerstones it's not necessarily the best coming in to a season.
Yeah, and you mentioned possession. I was looking at some stats bomb stuff, and no surprise who had the most possession in the league, but the Thorns were fourth, 51%. They managed possession, which was better than league average.
Who is 1-2-3? Who's 1-2-3?
North Carolina number one, Gotham number two, Angel City number three.
I was gonna say you were like no surprise number one, and I was like Gotham.
Nah,
I was like they love passing the ball to each other.
That's that Nate. That Nate. Where you know what? Transition. Time to talk about North Carolina.
It is. They're next on the list anyway.
They are next on the list, and yeah. So this team surprised the hell out of me last season. I know in my previews, and I know apparently Sean Nahas was scouring previews because, or at least somebody in North Carolina was doing so because they brought out all those things about people in their predictions of where they were going to end up last season. And I was like, ooh, spicy. I'm not mad at you. Yeah,
that video.
Yeah, that was funny. So, you know, but they did surprise the league. They surprised me. I think that the style that they played was kind of dope, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how it evolves. There are some losses, though. Tess Bode went to Bay FC. Mm-hmm. Emily Fox, Arsenal. That's still an interesting move for me, but she's been balling for them. So that's interesting, but they had to replace those players. And this hurts my heart, but it's number one on the list. Ashley Sanchez is a player that is now with the North Carolina Courage. So Bianca St. George's, Danny Weatherholt, which I thought was an interesting one, and Felicitas Rausch.
Yeah, and also, fortunately, have to mention it, that Caroline is likely to miss the majority of the season because she tore her ACL last October.
Yeah.
And it brings me a lot of pain as one of the people to really tell a lot of people being like, Caroline's a baller, she's gonna tear up this league, and she had an MVP season and did winning last year's MVP. North Carolina came third last year but got knocked out in the first round of playoffs to eventual playoff or championship winner Gotham. The interesting thing about North Carolina to me is, like, I know everyone is also going to be talking about Caroline and how big of a miss she is, and she's going to be an absolutely huge miss, but I think Tess Bode is going to be also a really big miss for them. To me, she was really, really important to their attack, and at time, especially because North Carolina last season like brought in four rookies, and you know, we're working them in, and so I think missing a player like missing both Caroline and Tess Bode is going to be huge for North Carolina. That's not to say that they didn't bring in other players like an Ashley Sanchez. And I also think Danny Weatherholt will be great in their midfield. But on the flip side of that, I do think Sean Nahas has basically used last season to really set the fundamentals of his team up in the way exactly how they want to play. And when it works really, really well. Like, I think there's probably no better example of that. Sorry, Andre, but like that 6-0 winning the Challenge Cup.
There's no reason to bring that up, actually.
So I'm sorry, but to me it was like, or even that 3-3 game with Gotham. Like, they, to be fair, Gotham came back, but like those first three goals were like, to me, exactly how I think North Carolina are going to play, and they were able to carve people open. And I think having a player like Miura coming back, but also some of their like other young guns that they have brought in. Like, I 100% expect North Carolina to make it to the playoffs. But also at the same time, I do have question marks, surprisingly, about their attack, given that they'll have no Tess Bodie and no Caroline, where those two players to me were really the centerpieces of the attack. And I'm also curious how they're going to also continue developing a player like Haley Hopkins.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. If you could have given me really any team in the league for Ashley Sanchez to have to go to, I would have chosen North Carolina, which hurts me to say, but that style,
why
that
would
system,
you say that?
Because of the style and the system, like like you give her space on the ball, the type of, you know, ball movement that they're known for, especially the strong midfield they have, like Denise O'Sullivan and Narumi Miura have been incredible. Like, Narumi was awesome last season.
So good.
Yeah, and Denise O'Sullivan has been extremely strong too. I actually thought that a European club was going to come and get her because there were a ton of rumors about her and nothing materialized. So it's really good that they're going to be able to keep hold of her and build on that and add Danny Weatherholt to that midfield. So like the more that they can be solid defensively and they can be good on the ball in terms of moving the ball around the way that they did, be as patient as they were, then like, yeah, I'm really excited to see what Ashley Sanchez can do because she is almost an impossible player to mark 1v1. And this is a system that should get her in plenty of 1v1 opportunities.
Yeah, that is super true. And I think also bringing a player like Bianca St. George, who, to be fair, they listed her as a forward, I believe, in their roster. But I'm not super confident she will actually play forward. But I think who do you think they're going to put in Emily Fox's place?
Roush. Roush is like Emily Fox on steroids. Like, not to say like she's so much better than Emily Fox, but like what they want, I think what they want to do is stay wide. And we know that Emily Fox goes on adventures. And I don't know if they love the adventures the entire time. Roush stays mm-hmm. wide, gets high, gets really involved in the attack as well. Like another one that was just really excellent recruiting by them. I think she's going to be great this season.
Taught me something because I can't lie, I did not know a ton about Felicitas Roush. For all of the other parts of North Carolina, like their midfield and their defense, I think they're going to still be extremely solid. And then you have Casey Murphy at the back, who is still a very, very good goalkeeper, even if she does not actually get minutes for the U.S. Women's National Team. She's still an absolutely fantastic goalkeeper, and so I don't want to say this, like, I feel like I'm already sounding like a broken record, but also it's a team that I expect to make, like, they're 8 playoff spots now, right? Like, I very much expect this team to get to the playoffs, and I wish, like, I know that now that the Challenge Cup has changed, but for example, if, like, the Challenge Cup had been the way it was last season, I would be like, North Carolina, I think, is a shoe-in for a three-peat, but we know that that's currently impossible in the way it is with the current Challenge Cup.
It is not.
I was like, it's literally impossible. But like, if it was, you know, still kind of essentially a League Cup, I would be like, oh yeah, I 100% expect North Carolina to win that. And then potentially that could set them up to win for another trophy. But they're definitely two of, like, one of my top four really strong teams this season.
Yeah, I think in terms of things to watch, Matt Takubo, who was awesome last season, keep watching her develop. I believe she's still a teenager, but a player from Japan. She's awesome. And honestly, the thing I'm going to be waiting to see is if he can get Ashley Sanchez scoring consistently. That was the only thing really that the Spirit were never able to really get from her is consistent goal scoring. And if they're able to get that, they're going to win some things. Okay, Seattle Reign.
Watch out.
Let's go to talk about the Seattle Reign. No longer OL Reign. They are back to Seattle Reign.
Wait, Andre, we forgot to say something about North Carolina.
What did we forget to say?
Friend of the pod, Estelle Johnson, is also out.
Oh, that's right.
From maternity leave. Congratulations to Estelle Johnson. I forgot. Yeah. I wrote a note for myself and then completely missed it. And I was like, wait a second. You have to mention that.
That's dope.
Go babies.
I know, right? Babies. Okay, now to Seattle Reign. Seattle Reign is back. The Queen is back. The rebrand, the name, everything. Well, the rebrand is the same logo, but slightly different colors, which, you know, I'm not going to lie. Think I might like them better.
Had a little glow up. The Queen had a little glow up. She needed to go away. And then she came back. She had a good little glow up.
She did. She did. So Seattle Reign is a team that, woof, things were looking rough, and they still might on the player side, to be honest. Like, they rebounded a bit, but this is just a list of players, and this ain't all of them, but still, like, Megan Rapinoe retired. Roosevelt and Emily Sonnet went to Gotham. Sam Hyatt later followed to Gotham. So, like, that's a lot of key players to leave. And the wild thing for me is, even though the Reign had these players, especially Roosevelt as well, in terms of, like, just being such a unique talent, they still had a moment where Laura Harvey last season was like, y'all, guess what we doing? We're just defending. We're going to try and hit players' teams on the counter. We're not playing these games. And it wasn't the prettiest thing. But that also makes me think, I don't know what we're going to see this season. So they did bring in players, Ji So-yeon, who we both love.
Heck yeah.
Ji is amazing. I love that Ji's in the NWSL. I can't
still
really wait
move to Seattle
to watch her. Angarad James came over as well, which is her second stint. I'm leaving the NWSL. And they drafted Sam Meza, who I am really high on. So excited to see what she can do. But this really feels like this is going to be really big for, at least an attack, for Jordan Heidema, Bethany Balser, Ziara King. I think those are going to be the players that they're really going to rely on in attack.
Yeah, I do think G will be a part of that attack. I'm curious how she would play with a player like Jess Fishlock.
You know, I was going to ask you, do you think G's going to play deeper, or is she going to go back to attacking midfield?
I think she would go back to attacking midfield. I feel like at points last season we saw, kind of by necessity, to be fair, we saw Fishlock drop into a bit of a deeper role, where I feel like her main job was just cracking skulls and taking names, which sometimes I appreciate. But yeah, I do see her, or like, I do see Jess Fishlock maybe becoming more of like a true eight, so G can be a flourish as a 10, especially thinking about the player, like, you know, even though Roosevelt, I will say, was injured for large parts of the season and also wasn't like a consistent 90-minute player for them, that still is a huge miss from your squad. Also thinking of, and yes, obviously with Megan Rapinoe retiring, like, thinking about, like, maybe the two, not really big focal points of the attack, but maybe you're like two of your big illustrators at time of your attack. And those two players, and so bringing in a player like Ji So-yeon, like, I'm so excited. Look, I guarantee to you, okay, I don't want to guarantee, but if I could bet money, I would probably bet money on Ji scoring her first NWSL goal off a free kick of someone getting injured outside of the 18, and she's just going to hit an absolute banger. She's really, really good at it. So yes, I do think that is very exciting. And yeah, I expect their attack to be some form of a Balser, Heidema, King. But also, I would say, like, Latsko really carried them through a big part of the end of last season. She was, to me, the reason why they got to the final with those two goals that she scored. And so I also expect her to, like, to be in the mix as well. But yeah, if I'm being honest, I don't really know. It's like, I see this OL Reign. Oh my God, not OL. Whoa, Seattle Reign team on paper. And I'm like, obviously you're missing big, like, missing players like a Rapinoe, like a Roosevelt, technically you lost Emily Sonnet. But also technically Sam Hyatt. And those are, like, I'd say at least three out of those four players are really important players to this squad. But also at the same time, it's like, you still have an Alana Cook at the back. You still have a Lou Barnes at the back. I think Phoebe McClernan at times last season really came alive in a way that I hadn't really seen from her in this league before. And then you bring in a player like Ji So-yeon, who also can just like make things kind of appear out of thin air as well for you too. So yeah, it's like, and then you have Andre, obviously. I know you've talked a lot about Sam, as I watch a lot of her highlights. I think she's also a great player to bring in too. But yeah, Seattle is one of those teams that I'm like, not like, I kind of sort out a lot of all three of, or I put all the teams in the leagues in like one of three buckets of like, I know I'm going to, like, I know what to expect from you, and I expect that it's going to be really good. I'm not so sure on what to expect from you, and I have no idea if it's going to be good or bad. And then it's like, I want you to break my expectations of things potentially not going well. And for me, Seattle is one of those teams where it's like, I kind of know what to expect from you, but also at the same time, I have no idea how this is going to go, because players do take time, like outside of a few players really do take time to kind of adjust to the NWSL and its playing nature. And like, you know, there's so many quirks about the NWSL, not even just in the way they play, but I'm thinking like travel, like quite simply travel, like huge amounts of travel. People are not prepared for traveling.
It's a large country with a lot of different climates in a summer league. Yes,
exactly. Like people are not prepared, like fundamentally are not prepared for that. And like, that's just on a baseline thing with travel, but also, you know, different playing styles. Maybe some of, like, I'm not going to lie, especially for, I think, a lot of these players coming out of teams in Europe, where, you know, every game is not necessarily going to be the most competitive game that you're going to play week in and week out, versus in the NWSL, every single game is extremely competitive. And, like, truly anyone can win on any given week, which is why also last season was so fun. So, yeah, for me, Seattle is just one of those teams where it's like, don't 100% know what I'm going to get from you. You still have a lot of really good pieces, and like the bone, and say still the majority of the spine of your team is intact, but also at the same time, I'm like, I don't really know.
So here's my big thing with Seattle. I'm wondering with like how Laura Harvey's going to approach it. Sometimes when coaches get to do more coaching, like legit coaching, they get excited and like they can really like start to cook. I don't know how much she really was able to cook, because she really had to kind of keep an eye on like Megan Rapinoe's final season. It was a World Cup year. Roosevelt also World Cup. Emily Sonnet became important to the national team as well. And I think that she, and her, by the way, she was also maybe considered for a national team coach at some point once that whole calamity went down. And so I think there were moments when she basically just kind of tried to keep things steady as opposed to changing things. And you can kind of see that in, unfortunately, I'm looking at the numbers here in terms of expected goals per game throughout the season, only the Chicago Red Stars had lower.
Sheesh. Because I feel like if I like holistically think about Rain's season last year, it was like, will they score more than one goal? I was like, I'm confident they will score one goal, but it's like, will they score more than one? And it was always just like I can't lie, it was honestly always a question. But the fact that their XG, like their overall XG, which I feel like for overall XG, that does kind of tell the story, it can help be helpful in telling the story of a season. The fact that only Chicago's was worse is really saying something.
It is. And I can find post shot. It just, what StatsBomb does, it gives it to me when I look at goalkeepers. So I might have to switch. And yeah, give me 1 second.
Let's move on to Angel City. Angel City is hosting Bay FC on Sunday, March 17th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Angel City, I'm going to immediately slot them in the I'm not 100% sure what to expect for them for two reasons. One, Junendo is torn her ACL. I hate it. I hate it with my whole heart. I hate it so much. But if we are being honest about this Angel City team, so much of the great moves that they've had going forward in the past two seasons has come as a result of Junendo.
She's such a baller.
She's, besides the fact that she's such a baller, she's also so important to the attack of this team. And unfortunately, we still don't know when Kristen Press is coming back. which pains me deeply. And another reason why I don't 100% know what to expect from Angel City is because right now they're the Babysitters Club. I'm sorry. They've signed a whole bunch of U18 players. They're almost a baby.
And they have a bunch of 30-plus-year-old players. They got babysitters and they got babies.
They got babies and babysitters. And so I can't lie, don't 100% know what to expect for them. But just some key players I've joined. Obviously, we've mentioned Rocky Rodriguez and how good she is. She's immediate, like, I think with the loss of Savannah McCaskill, which I know most Angel City fans are extremely happy about already, bringing in a player like Rocky Rodriguez is going to be great for them. Like, fundamentally, I think seeing like Rocky put in also at times, thinking about her W Gold Cup performances and putting in just like fun, like a lot of dirty work. Like, think about that match against Canada, the second one, not the first, the second one, Rocky Rodriguez was just putting in a lot of dirty work. That really went unnoticed, or it didn't go unnoticed, but like often doesn't get a lot of shine. And I think for an Angel City team, that's, she's going to be really good going forward, but she's also going to be really good off the ball as well. Messiah Bright, friend of the pod.
Yes.
Our rookie of the year.
Love this move. Yes.
Has joined.
Definitely.
I was watching some of her highlights back today and like, what a get. She is so good. She can score with her left. She can score with her right. She can score with her head. She can just pounce. One of the goals she scored against Portland, Andre, I don't know if you remember this. One of the goals she scored against Portland, she just pounced on a back pass. Like, and also, it wasn't like a bad back pass or anything. Like, it wasn't like it was, like, unfortunately, like Vanessa Gille to Kaylin Sheridan in the W Gold Cup where it just got caught in a puddle. Or even a bad misplaced back pass. She just, like, had the intelligence to just immediately go and pounce on it and then scored a great goal. So I think Messiah Bright coming in is great. Some of the kids they have signed, Giselle Thompson, younger sister of Alyssa Thompson. Really excited to see her get her first professional minutes, as well as Casey Fair. New Jersey's own Casey Fair, which hurts my heart as a girl from Jersey. But Casey Fair, who I believe was the youngest player to ever enter a Women's World Cup match? Yes, no, maybe? Someone, the stat, check me. On that, however, she is one of the youngest players to ever play in a Women's World Cup. I just don't remember off the top of my head if she's actually the youngest. As well as Kennedy Fuller, who they recently signed, who is also another U18 player. I believe Kennedy Fuller was a UNC commit. Anson's going to be big mad.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell UNC gonna look like next season, but like all those kids were like, nah, we going to the league.
They were like, sorry. And then on top of that, some players that they have unfortunately lost are Simone Charlie, who left as a free agent, went to Orlando Pride. Obviously, we've mentioned Savannah McCaskill going to San Diego, and then they lost Scarlett Camberos, who is now with Bay FC. And then they also have brought in Maggie Doherty Howard to shore up that midfield as well. This is also Becky Tweed's first full season, or first starting season? I don't know how to phrase this, but it's
full
her first
season. Right.
Yeah, her first full season. Well, I'm like, I don't want to say bad things.
Well, don't know.
Anyway, that's
at
right.
The moment,
anyway,
we're going to anticipate. We're
anticipating good things. Anticipating good things. It's Becky Tweed's first full season as head coach after taking over midseason after Freya Coombe got the sack. And she guided Angel City from basically near the bottom of the table to their first playoff berth in club history. They also, and I think this is, look, we've hyped up some of their signings, but I think their most important signing is they re-signed Sarah Gordon.
Yeah.
If Angel City wants to throw every caution to the wind, throw everyone forward and just score goals and play extremely attacking football, you need someone who's going to be able to clean up everything in the back. And you sign the one player that punked her once. Unfortunately, I remember that goal that Messiah Bright scored. However, signing Sarah Gordon, like re-signing her for this season, is absolutely huge for Angel City. And if I'm putting it out there right now, she stays healthy, Sarah Gordon is your defender of the year. I think she is going to be so important to this squad and so important to how they do in the league. But also, I think last season she was missed as defender of the year because I thought she was fantastic, but I also just think for their defensive solidity, Sarah Gordon will be a very key part of that. And then you have the kids and the old heads going forward with an Alyssa Thompson and a Messiah Bright. But then you also have Sid LaRue coming in and kind of hopefully molding these young forwards into being absolute world beaters, which I believe they can be. As well as, you know, you still have Casey Fair going there up top as well, too.
Yeah, I am. I think my biggest question about Angel City is really how is Becky Tweed going to set them up? Because if you're looking at their squad, you see a lot of players who, midfielders specifically, who play a bit deeper. Maggie Doherty Howard plays a bit deeper. Madison Hammond has been their six. Amandine Henri has been their six. Lily Nabet has played their six. Rocky Rodriguez has played deeper. Some people think that Rocky Rodriguez is going to get pushed up a little bit, and I don't think that would be a good idea. I think Rocky is best playing a little bit deeper, maybe going box to box. Her defensive work rate and her defensive instincts are very good. To me, you get a firm, what I'm hoping to see, I'm not a coach, clearly, but what I'm hoping to see is the fact that they go with a strong defense with deeper lying midfielders, and you just hope that one of the kids goes off. Like Kennedy Fuller takes that spot. I think you could even look at, maybe even having Messiah Bright not play as a 10, but she was so good for Orlando at picking the ball up and carrying it forward to the attacking third. So she does like to drop deep and get on the ball and can carry it forward. And I think if you have the wide fullbacks that we expect, M.A. Vignola, Jasmine Spencer, Giselle Thompson, these are forward, Allie Riley, these are fullbacks that like to get forward a lot and get forward quickly. If you have that plus the wingers, which will be Claire Emsley, Sid LaRue, Alyssa Thompson, hopefully at some point Kristen Press, then I think you're cooking, you know, but they don't really have a standout number 10. And I kind of hope that Becky Tweed says, you know what, that's fine. We either build along the wings or we have Messiah Bright get the ball and dribble forward and just try to support her when she does get on the ball so that she's not surrounded by multiple defenders, which is kind of what happened at Orlando a few times. Because the only times that Messiah Bright was inefficient is when she was shooting from long distances because she'd already carried the ball about 10, 15, 20 yards. Yeah. And there was nothing else to do but smack the ball with her foot and hope that she could get a long range shot off. And that didn't work. But when she was able to get in the box and get on the end of things, she was dangerous. So I'll be looking forward to that.
Do you think they try to play Claire Emsley a bit deeper?
Yeah, I was wondering about that too. She's another one that I think you might be able to get her central and C, but the problem is just there's not a natural player in that spot unless you really look at Fuller. But again, she's an under 18 player and you just that's tough to go and rely on that. But I do think that if you give her the defensive stability behind, you might be able to let her cook against a few teams. But it is going to take a minute, obviously. Going to be first professional season. That's why I'm that's a big glaring hole. Maybe Clarice Lebihan?
Yeah, I was maybe Clarice. I would think off looking at this squad list that they'd probably bring a player like Claire Emsley a bit deeper to help pull strings. I do think of Rocky Rodriguez as a pure eight. But
let her be that.
Technically, I think that's what Savannah McCaskill is supposed to be, but I don't really know. Angel City fans, correct me if I'm wrong. I can't lie. That is a bit of what I expect of a very solid defense. Kids go have fun. But that is also, I can't lie, one of the question marks. I mean, I think it's such a thing to talk about now, of young players are fun and you love seeing young players grow and stuff. But also with that comes inconsistency because they are young. They're inexperienced. That's why Angel City for me is kind of in that category of I don't really know what to expect from them. On paper, I'm things could happen. But also, you have at least, I think you have four? Yeah, you have you have four under 18 players. Is Alyssa Thompson officially over the age of 18? I don't think so. I expect them... I very much expect them to, though, also kind of do what we saw them do a bit last season, which is getting Emma Vignola and a Jasmine Spencer or a Allie Riley in the mix high up the wings. So, yeah.
Okay, up next is Gotham, New York, or sorry, New Jersey, New York. New Jersey is first. New Jersey, New York, Gotham FC. The team that won the NWSL championship and spent the offseason signing every free agent they could. And so you are looking at key losses. Allie Krieger retired and apparently is heading up ESPN's NWSL coverage. Love that. Shout out to her. Mandy Haught to Utah. Ellie Jean gone. Christy Mewis over in London hanging out with Sam Kerr. I said Sam, but I was like, there's also Sam Mewis, and that's not where she's at. So yeah.
The dramatic pause.
Yeah, dramatic pause. Allie Long is no longer with the team. Imani Dorsey to Utah. Ife Onamanu to Utah as well. Coming into Gotham squad, though, yo, this is still silly. Like this list is just still the silliest thing. In one off season, Crystal Dunn, Tierna Davidson, Rose Lavelle, Emily Sonnet, Sam Hyatt, and also Cassie Miller. So, like,
Cassie Miller was the first transfer with the new intra-league funds, which is like, why create another fake monetary value for this league? Andre, I'll let you get all your Gotham feelings out, and then I'll say my Gotham feelings, because I have a feeling my Gotham feelings are going to be longer.
I'm going to say I'm not the person that goes to Gotham games or you know, covers Gotham. So, like, I watch them and all that, but I'm just going to let you, like, you tell us what to expect. But remember, we got, like, 12 more teams to go. Well, maybe not 12. I did
less,
wrong math.
Less than 12. Maths. Okay. Gotham. Really, really strong offseason. I think it'd be silly to say they're not having a long, did not have a strong offseason. But also, for as many players that Gotham brought in, they also lost a bunch of players. There is no Allie Krieger, who I can't lie, I think more than anything was the team really rallied around her at the end of last season to win that championship. On top of that, you have no Mandy Haught.
Team Kriegs.
You have no Mandy Haught, who filled in as the backup to an Abby Smith, who is still on the SEI list. On top of that, you have no Allie Long, no Christy Mewis, no Imani Dorsey, no Ife Onamanu. You know, for as many players as you brought in, there are also the same amount of players that you have lost. But honestly, with this Gotham team, knowing Juan Carlos Amoros, like, I expect a lot of the same of what we saw last season, but maybe a bit more rotation. All those players, like, there's a reason why people are jokingly calling Gotham Team U.S. Women's National Team, right? Like, across the squad between Rose, Crystal, now Jenna Neiswanger, Emily Sonnet, Mitch Purse, Lynn Williams, that's, what, seven already off the top of my head? And I'm probably Tierna Davidson. There's eight. You know, that's... obviously, you can't fit, I don't think... Well, you could try to fit all the eight of those players into the starting 11, but this team is really going to heavily rely on rotation. But I think one thing that Gotham really excelled with last season, whether it was sometimes good, sometimes bad, was really relying on the foundation of how they wanted to play. Being a highly possessive team, sometimes I would just wanted to shout, like, shoot at them, because they would just, like, pass the ball 17 times in the box. But you're still going to have, you know, some strong forwards in an Esther Gonzalez or a Katie Stengel, if Katie Stengel's coming off the bench or if she's starting. You know, super strong midfielders / midfielder turned goalie in a Neely Martin, but having a Delaney Sheehan or a Yasmin Ryan to back up. I think, like, I very much still expect a Delaney Sheehan or a Yasmin Ryan to start and get in the mix. But I do expect this team to be heavily, like, just heavy rotation all across the board. But my one, and I think, and obviously bringing in a player like Tierna Davidson with losing a player like Allie Krieger is a fantastic replacement especially watching Tiernan in that last in those last two U.S. Women's National Team matches. She had two really, really strong performances, and I know that's going to really help bolster up the defense. But outside of that, I can't lie, I still have a few questions about defense and the goalkeeper. Is Cassie Miller going to start? I don't think Michelle Batos would start. but those are questions I have. And then who's going to be the pairing? I would expect a Sam Hyatt to be the pairing of next to a Tierna Davidson. But, and I mean, Gotham, like, kind of, I don't know how no one decided to tactically choose this of, like, really going at a player like Maitane Lopez, who does not normally play as a center back. She's normally, like, a 6'8". And then, you know, spent half the season because she was the best partner to Allie Krieger at center back. I don't think Gotham can get away with that for a full season again.
Yeah, what I'm going to be interested in Gotham is that intense style they play is tough. It's difficult. It's demanding. That's what I mean to say. It is demanding.
It is very demanding.
And I also think having a lot of national team players, I'm just going to say, from a spirit perspective, when we had all the national team players, it didn't go so well for us, especially in a major tournament year. And the U.S. is going to the Olympics. And while the league will be on a break, it still is disruptive. So I'm interested to see how Gotham is going to deal with all of that. But ultimately, when the players are on the pitch, when they're healthy, Gotham is going to be fucking scary.
Yeah, they will be a very scary team on paper, but it's also like thinking about, like, we've seen some super teams before who some have done really, really well and then others haven't. And it's also just going to be a matter of like chemistry and making sure that all, like, everyone is set up in the to be their most successful selves. Because also I think I've seen at a time where like Gotham at times where, like, you know, Juan Carlos sometimes would just pick the 11 and like wouldn't necessarily or deviate from that. And, but like, because you have so many national team players in an Olympics year where, to be fair, the Olympics, it's only 18, but you technically still have, I believe, four replacement, like injury replacement players as alternates. But, you know, it is like, that is going to be a huge question for them of how Juan Carlos plans to rotate this team. And I think going forward, super set, but yeah, I still just have a question or two about those midfields.
And now we're going to get to the Orlando Pride. Oh, the Pride. The Pride have been fun this offseason. Super, super fun.
I think they've won the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, you just talked about all the free agents that Gotham signed, but I think it's maybe like 1A, 1B. I mean,
I don't know. They signed Barbara Branda.
Yeah. Yes, we're getting to it.
I know. I just can't. Like, that is... Oh yeah. My God.
Yes, we've been waiting for that. So okay, yeah, here we go. They lost Messiah Bright. We talked about her now with Angel City. They had Simone Charlie, and they still have Simone Charlie technically, but she tore her Achilles, this time in her other foot, which is really, really, really.
Wait, is that what they said? They only said Achilles injury.
All right, well, Achilles injury in her right foot this time, but it's the other foot, which is sad. And apparently Raffaele fractured a bone in her foot as well. So she's going to be out for a little bit, hopefully not a very long time, but fractures are not fun. So we'll see how long it takes her to recover. This is the other one, though. When I told you like earlier that sometimes players' names, when they change, when players get married, always trips me up. I was like, yo, where the hell is Emily Madrill? She was good last season with them. I don't see her on the squad. What's going on? What did Orlando not announce? Where is she headed? I thought she was comfortable there. Apparently she's Emily Sams now. So everybody, it's all good. Emily Madrill is still there. She's just Emily Sams now. It's fine. Okay. Key players. Angelina joined. Luana joined again.
It's Rio de Orlando.
Evelina Joljan signed. Morgan Gautreau signed. That was an interesting one for me.
That's a good signing if she's healthy.
And then, of course, Courtney said it, Barbara Banda. Listen, I love Messiah Bright, but if you got an opportunity to sign Barbara Banda, you motherfucking sign Barbara Banda.
My days. Yo, that... She's going to tear... She's going to set the league on fire. I don't think people are prepared for Barbara. because she scored 2 hat tricks at the Olympics. Yo.
She's nasty.
She scored a hat trick against the Netherlands. Yo. Like, I just don't. It's like breaking my brain because it makes me want to move to Orlando. And like, I know it's a running joke for me, but like, I gotta see her up close in person every week because she is such a good signing. People are not prepared for the quality that she is going to bring on the pitch. And like her combining with a player like Adriana or something like that, like, can you imagine the chaos that's going to happen on the field with her on? I am so excited. I mean, I said it. I know that Gotham signed basically the U.S. Women's National Team, but I think from Orlando's additional signings of players that they got, like getting a player like Barbara Branda is huge. And I think, and like, honestly, Orlando was super unlucky to miss out on the playoffs last year. They literally missed it by 2 goals. They had the exact, like, Gotham got in by the skin of their teeth and Orlando was left out by the skin of their teeth. Literally, it was 2 goals. Gotham had a +1 goal differential. Orlando had a -1 goal differential. Otherwise, they would have been in the playoffs. And now that the playoffs are expanded to 8, I 100% expect Orlando to get there. I think if Morgan Gautreaux is healthy, she's going to be really, really good for them in the midfield, as well as bringing in a player like Angelina, bringing in Luana. Like, I think Orlando has made some really, really smart off-season moves this year, and it's going to pay off for them in the season because you're still building off. Hopefully Rafaela comes back relatively quickly, but you still have now an Emily Sams, as well as an Adriana. Obviously, I mean, Marta is Marta, but, you know, I think for the most part, the spine of that team is still really, really solid. And I think they're just going to keep building on everything that Seb Hines has been doing there in the last year. Because really, it was so deeply unfortunate that they missed out on the playoffs. Because they were one of the better teams in the season. And you go and you just add in all these other additional pieces that are just going to elevate what you've been doing the last year. And then you get the cherry on top with a Barbara Banda. Like, I don't want to say a hot take about Orlando, even though I feel it in my bones. But, like, I think they're going to do really, really well this season. I know I said that last season, too. But, like, I really think...
Well, I mean, they did.
They're going to be doing... Know? Well, yeah, but they didn't end up making the playoffs. I mean, which is unfortunate, but like, yeah,
this league. So for me, I think I'm interested to see how Seb Hines approaches how he kind of develops his team, because now it's like pressure's on. You know, last season, I think that there were a lot of people didn't have a lot of expectations over Orlando, even though we did. We were like, this is going to be a team that's going to be a problem. And in most games they were, some games they weren't. But I still think that the signings that they made, the ability to hurt teams in a number of ways that they have now. I'm expecting this team to be super fun, and hopefully climb the table. I'm definitely expecting playoffs, but I would like to see them get themselves into like close to that top 4. And I think they can do it if they stay healthy. But it's going to be a big test, you know, for Seb Hines. To me, this is expectations, and this is kind of where you feel like either you rise to them or you don't, and they kind of find out that they need to go and get somebody else, which I hope doesn't happen, because it's been good to have a Black coach in the league, and now we've got more, and that's good. So like, I want to see more success there, but I do think that this is a season that will have expectations, and last season wasn't, so there won't really be any sneaking up on folk.
I completely agree, and the expectations point is a huge one. My one thing, though, that I wish Orlando solved in the offseason, and they didn't, goalkeeper. We saw Anna Morehouse have some really, really strong performances last season, but we also saw that Orlando defense give up a lot of goals, and sometimes goals they should not have conceded. And so if that's, like, my one thing to point out for Orlando, as well as I just, you know, no Hafeli right now. Didn't necessarily upgrade goalkeeper wise. There are some questions for me with that specifically, because I think for the rest of their squad, once healthy, I can kind of picture out how this squad is, like who would kind of be their starting 11. But yeah, the goalkeeper still got questions.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I was looking at all the goalkeepers again and the on-ball value thing that I've been doing, Anna Morehouse was up there in the top five. But the only reason she was basically her distribution.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was her distribution. She was not. She was quite average. She was okay at stopping shots, but really her value to the team was in her passing ability, which kind of let you know, given the style that Orlando has been trying to play and wants to play, that kind of lets you know why they kept going back to her, even though we were like, yo, sometimes my guy, like sometimes
there are questionable things afoot.
Yeah, correct.
Thanks for listening to Diaspora United Podcast. Please subscribe and rate and review us anywhere you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Diaspora United Pod. That's Diaspora UTDPOD. And message us if there's anything you want us to talk about in our next podcast. See you next time.